Welcome to the CREXI podcast, an insider's look at all things commercial real estate. Each episode, the CREXI team dives into a broad range of topics to investigate trends, educate listeners, and understand the latest industry news. As the nation's fastest growing online CRE platform, we're excited to provide a window into the inner workings of commercial real estate for this generation and the next. Welcome and thank you all for joining us for this episode of the CREXI podcast, an insider's look at all things commercial real estate. In this show, we cover a range of topics that cater to CRE newcomers and industry leaders alike. I'm your host, Ashley Kobovich, Regional Director at CREXI. And today, we are thrilled to sit down with Carly Iacono at CBRE. A little bit about our guest. Carly Iacono is a Senior Vice President at CBRE's Capital Markets Investment Properties Group. She is also a Senior Advisor within the exclusive Net Lease Property Group, comprising a national team of top-level brokers located in major metropolitan areas across the United States that specialize in transacting single-tenant assets and net lease portfolios nationwide. Carly is an expert at structuring corporate sale leasebacks and advising clients on single and multi-tenant retail development projects. In addition to her national net lease practice, she also focuses on executing multi-tenant retail investment sales in the Northeast, while advising her clients professionally and with integrity in all aspects of the transaction. Carly, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Delighted to be here.
We're so excited. So I know we just covered your background pretty extensively, but I'd love to hear from you how you got started in your journey, your career path, and lessons that you learned along the way. So let's start off first and foremost. Tell us where you're from and tell us what first attracted you to commercial real estate and then specifically to the net lease market.
Sure, absolutely. So I went to high school and elementary school in Pittsburgh. So I grew up there and then I went to college at Washington and Lee University where I studied business. And my first job was in New York City, actually in finance. Kind of a crazy story. I was in litigation consulting, which was the financial side of legal cases. Absolutely hated it. Quit on my 1 year anniversary of my job to the day and thought, what would I really love to do? Real estate. So let me pivot and kind of start over, take my finance background and try something different. So went into actually residential real estate, which my family is in and my father's been quite successful in for a year. Knew that's not what I wanted to do. Started my own boat business. I know, weird twist, but have the entrepreneur side as well. Ran that for 7 years, sold it. And then decided it was time to focus on what I knew I'd be good at and really wanted to do, which was commercial real estate. And started in retail back in 2014.
That's amazing. I love the pivoting. I love that you stuck it out for a year in different things. I think that some people, it's really hard to even give it that time, but you knew it wasn't for you. Love the entrepreneurial spirit and then getting into commercial real estate. So tell us a little bit about some of the lessons and tools you learned early on, whether that was from running your own business or as a broker. So anything that comes to mind.
Every day is a new day. There are so many stories. I'll tell you how I started and really decided that I wanted to focus on net lease. When I got into the business, I was not fortunate to have a mentor. So I was kind of on my own, figuring out the path and was told, as so many new brokers are, okay, this is your territory. This is what you have to do. So I databased and had all of my retail contacts and, you know, went on my first meeting. So my first meeting on my own was a party planning store. It was a local operator, mom and pop business. I walked in, the place was falling down. Stuff everywhere, absolutely not great. And I thought, this is not the kind of property I want to be selling. It's probably worth $150,000. But I was excited these people had agreed to meet with me, brand new, why not go and try? So I left that meeting and I came back to the office and I said, I want to envision where I want to be in a few years. And those are the types of deals I'm going to start working on now, however long it takes. Mm-hmm. So I transitioned the business plan few weeks in and said, I'm not going to do everything. I want to be a specialist and focus on national tenants, focus on net lease specifically, and build a practice around that. So that was sort of a pivotal moment in commercial real estate when you're out there and you're just learning and you say, this is not exactly where I want to go. So how do I take this and transition to the next step? And that's just experience, right?
Sure.
Being on the street and realizing you need to make a change. So that's kind of what got me started, focused on net lease. And it's been a long road from there to here.
Yes, I love it. Sometimes you just have to be in the day-to-day and doing something to realize this is for me or this isn't for me, right? And then start to build that plan. I love that you mentioned and you said that you didn't have a mentor to start. What were some favorite transactions throughout your career? Do you have a favorite that sticks out? And if it does, why was that your favorite?
Yeah, there's a few buckets I would touch on here. So I love helping people. And I know that sounds a little bit cheesy, but it's true.
It's true.
There are clients who I've worked with through the years who no longer own commercial real estate. Mm-hmm. They're out of the business by choice, and they will still call me and say, you changed my life. How are you? I haven't talked to you in 3 years. I want you to know that, you know, I've retired and I'm traveling and I'm so happy. Thank you. So those are really meaningful experiences. I had one just recently who called me, a lot of family conflicts, a lot of issues with the asset that he owned. And he said, you know, I wanted to tell you, my doctor just took me off my blood pressure medicine. And he asked me, what did you change in your life? An older gentleman. And he said, the only thing I told him is you sold the property that I owned for 60 years and you changed my life. And now I'm just in a better place. Mm-hmm. And I thought, gosh, that's really great. Because in the private client market, we do work with people who have conflicts. They have reasons they're selling.
Sure.
So solving those problems and changing the trajectory of someone's life is great, very rewarding. They're not all like that, but I do love those. Now, the other bucket is much more on the broker side. And those are the deals that just go incredibly well that you're so grateful for. Maybe we outperform on price.
Sure.
Maybe we exceed the expectations on timeline. There was a Rite Aid that I sold not that long ago, a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago. Very difficult tenant, right? They have a lot of credit issues, difficult to sell. We brought on the listing and then within a few weeks had met a buyer that we did not know previously just through our marketing and outreach efforts. And from meeting the buyer to close, it was 10 days. 10 days. Start to finish. Hello, I'd like to make an offer. Here's my proof of funds to closing. Now, there were time pressures. It was an end of the year trade. He was trying to get it done for tax reasons before year end. But it was an incredible deal story. And one that, you know, with 1031 legend, basically, right? That's what we all wish was the case, right? Start to finish on a Rite Aid, buyer and seller rep in 10 days.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are those stories too. And I think what's so much fun about the business is every deal is truly different. Different pros, different cons, different challenges, different geography, different tenants. It's not dull, which I love.
I love that you touched on both different aspects. So whenever I have conversations with brokers, they say, you know, yes, the transactions are important and that's fantastic, but then it's also the advisory aspect and the person, right? And who you are helping, right? I love that you want to help people. I don't think it's cheesy. I think that if everyone, you know, ran that motto in their life or kind of used that mantra to help other people, the world would be a better place, but I love that you break it out like that. Now, I promise this is not a plug, but because you're saying this one deal and how, you know, your marketing efforts got this buyer, what do you guys use? Give us a little secret sauce without going too deep. How do you make sure that you're always advertising to buyers and, you know, getting the name out there?
Just Crexy. Nothing else. Nothing else exists.
I'm not paying her to say that.
If I don't say that, there's actually an eject button on the seat.
You're going away. Like,
you knew what you were supposed to say. No, obviously it's a great tool in all seriousness. We do love Crexy and we do use it all the time. But it's a mix of efforts. So it's email marketing, it's social marketing, which has been incredibly valuable. It's the attention we get through our own podcast that our team runs.
Yep.
It's really leaving no stone unturned. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it that we focus on too, that a lot of brokers don't, because they'll say, oh, we just work list side or we're not worried about buyers. I have spent a lot of years building relationships with other brokers in other product types. Mm-hmm. So industrial brokers, yep, multifamily. And those relationships feed us buyers that are very hard to find, yep, otherwise, right? Yep. So it's our own outreach, it's outward marketing, it's all the, you know, key listing things like Crexy, like our CBRE deal flow, like our, yep, email marketing. But at the end of the day, it's really your relationships and the reach on your sphere of influence, mm-hmm, that I think is so meaningful. Accountants. Yep. I mean, anybody that you touch could be a potential source of business.
For sure.
And that's something that we've really spent a lot of time on and value those relationships.
Absolutely. It really is all about who you know and making sure that you're constantly touching these folks, whether they can do something for you now or in the future, right?
Exactly.
Not looking at it from a transaction perspective, but really nurturing those relationships and going out of your way. And people want to work with people they like, and how you present yourself or your brand, and that ever so gets easier right now with social media and how you can push everything out. So really, just as you said, leaving no stone unturned. So thanks for giving us a little insight, yeah, there. So coming in to our question on some fundamental tenets on your work ethic that you maintain today. Obviously, a ton of experience, Carly. Do you have any daily habits or practices that have become essential to your career? So it can be commercial real estate related. It can be other practices like yoga or meditation or gym or family life. Give us a little bit of insight on what makes you you.
I think organization is key in what we do because the business is so varied. No day is the same. I'm often on the road at conferences or meeting clients or here in the city with you. Mm-hmm. So having a structured team effort is crucial. So we have team calls every morning at 9:30, no matter where I am.
I love that.
If we have to shift the time a little bit, mm-hmm, we do. And that's the time where we sit down and we prioritize the day. What are the goals for the day? Who do I need to follow, mm-hmm, up with today? What can wait till tonight? Who's, mm-hmm, tomorrow?
Sure.
What's the rest of the team working on if I'm not in the office?
Right.
So the goal is really to give structure to a very unstructured business.
Yep.
Which I think is crucial.
Yep.
Then on the personal side, just juggling all of this and the maintaining a well-rounded personality at the same time is a challenge. So,
yep,
of course, exercise. I like to live by do one thing every day that makes you feel alive, mm-hmm, and grateful to be here. Whether that's going for a hike at 8 p.m. on a Tuesday when you may not have, right? Or having, yep, a picnic or helping someone, mm-hmm, that you know is down. Whatever it is that day, just some little thing every single day that you go, God, I'm really happy that I got to do that, whatever, mm-hmm, it was. So I try to work that into my life too.
I love that. Both aspects. I think that organization is so important. I was listening to a podcast recently and they said, show me someone's calendar and I'll show you their life, right?
Yes.
Or I'll show you what's important or their priorities. Mm-hmm. So organization, especially when everything is changing so much in commercial real estate, is key. And then just carving that time out for yourself, right? Making yourself that priority and doing what genuinely makes you happy. And you can go to bed at night saying, I'm grateful for this, you know, mm-hmm, that appreciation and gratitude. So really important stuff. Moving into our second topic, getting into the weeds of what we're going to be discussing today, which is innovation in commercial real estate and future-proofing companies for success. So it's clear that net lease has become and has been a booming sector in the last few years. What are some of the key drivers of this shift? So what did you see the net lease market looking like maybe 5 or 10 years ago compared to what you see today?
It's changed significantly. It really has. So I think big picture, it's become a much more institutionalized marketplace. And by that, I mean we have inflows of capital from new investor profiles that we didn't have 5 years ago, definitely not 10 years ago. A lot of funds, more private REITs, more foreign investors, just different profiles interested in net lease. It used to just be a handful of REITs in the private client market. So I love that it's expanding and getting attention. We have clients calling all the time saying, we want to diversify into net lease or into retail, of course, two different things. And historically, maybe those were just multifamily owners. Mm-hmm. So the attention is really shifting to consider it a mainstream asset class overall, which I love. And I think part of that is because the tenants want individual single tenant net lease structures. Mm-hmm. So we have more companies who are focused on this type of ownership. And because of that, it's growing just in the supply in the industry, the types of deals, which I know we'll touch mm-hmm. on. And then that is leading to increased investor demand because everyone can kind of find a niche within net lease that speaks to them from the investor standpoint.
Sure. No, absolutely. So how competitive would you say the asset class is compared to other property types? With that said,
I think insanely competitive, mm-hmm. both from the investor side and of course from the brokerage side. So whenever you have a national marketplace, you're pulling so many people from different areas who are looking at the same deal. Mm-hmm. So if you have a quality asset that's priced right, you're going to get attention from the private market, from the institutions, from people in all different geographies. So there's just a ton of overlap. Now, if you're marketing, let's say the building we're sitting in New York right now, I'm sure you could say that would be a hyper-competitive bid process, but it's likely going to be a very small pool of bidders, mm-hmm. although they might fight ferociously for it. It's less breadth, right?
Sure.
More narrow of mm-hmm. a focus. So with net lease, it appeals to more different types of buyers and more types of investors. So I think the competition, because of the asset type, is extreme. The brokerage side, same thing. We can transact in all 50 states, as mm-hmm. can most net lease mm-hmm. brokers. So we're all going mm-hmm. after sort of the same types of clients. So extremely competitive.
Yes, absolutely. So one of the things that you were saying is that investors have changed, right? Who's purchasing some of these assets. So what kind of investors are entering the space? Give us a little bit more detail on that. Who are the sellers and what's really driving the activity and the interest in this market?
So it depends on what vein of net lease we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Sale leasebacks are incredibly in demand right now because it's just a fantastic tool for companies to monetize the real estate. So from the owner user perspective, mm-hmm. it's very difficult to access the capital markets, as we all know, mm-hmm. right now. So if you need money to grow, you need money to expand or pay down debt, mm-hmm. a sale leaseback is an incredibly valuable tool in today's market. From the investor side, that is just also a very in-demand deal structure because you know that that tenant is committed to the space. They want to be there. You can mm-hmm. structure the deal along with them to meet your investment parameters. So those deals are working very well right now. Not private equity driven. They've been a little quiet, but more on the smaller private company side. Now, on the other part of the market, we have the stable, smaller price point 1031 deals mm-hmm. like fast food, like Tractor mm-hmm. Supply, 7-Eleven. All of those are still trading because there are some cash buyers.
Sure.
And I think clients are looking for stability. Mm-hmm. We've had a ton of volatility the last few years, and anything that has a credit tenant or at least a stable tenant under a long-term lease with a predictable return is attractive.
Sure, absolutely. So you kind of went into a little bit of the next question I was going to ask, but the 1031 market. So tell us a little bit about what's going on there. Anything interesting, obviously coming up towards the end of the year, a lot of interest, you know, to get in deals before year end close. But tell us a little bit about the market and what's going on.
It's a challenging time in the market. We're not going to sugarcoat that. And mm-hmm. it's not driven by lack of demand, as we just touched yep. on. These types of deals are incredibly in demand from so many different investor profiles.
Sure.
The problem is the capital markets, the interest rates. Mm-hmm. So we're finding that the lower price point deals that can still attract cash buyers are trading very well, very fluidly. It's when the financing comes into play that it's very difficult. So 1031 exchange volume is down significantly. And if you look at some of the numbers, year over year, multifamily sales are down 71% last quarter, 71%. Now, not everybody who sells an apartment building is going to go into net lease, mm-hmm. but especially in the private client, that is a normal trajectory of capital. So if they're not selling their legacy apartment buildings and looking for a lifestyle change, mm-hmm. they're not buying net lease. Mm-hmm. And then within net lease, if you have debt to replace as part of your 1031 exchange, that's very difficult to do right now. So if you have a property, let's say with a 4% interest rate and you're selling it and you want to buy something else, you still have to replace your existing debt or you're taxed on it, right? It's called mortgage boot.
Right.
So the problem is, how do you replace that debt and have enough cash flow in your new property to service the debt payments?
Mm-hmm.
Because your interest rate might be 7.1%
right.
instead of 4. So those factors and sort of that dislocation in the credit markets and pricing is causing significantly less deal volume.
Mm-hmm.
I think year over year, we're down 64% across the industry in transaction volume. So very significant. And we're hoping that changes. But again, that's sort of an artificial problem, not because of lack of supply or demand, just because of the financing.
Okay. So if you have clients like that that are coming to you, how are you advising them and kind of how are you structuring deals, you know, to help in that aspect?
Case by case.
Yep.
And we're definitely working for our fees. No, mm-hmm. every deal is requiring more creativity.
Sure.
Maybe we're looking for owner-seller financing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we're trying to take modest negative leverage, but meaning the interest rate is below your cap rate of return, mm-hmm. negative leverage, and make sure that the loan has no prepayment penalty so that the mm-hmm. client mm-hmm. could theoretically refi in a few years
right.
if the situation gets better. Like we're
right.
just being very mindful of what sort of debt they're putting on in this market to make sure they're not locked in
mm-hmm.
long term.
Good.
Maybe they're doing a partial exchange
mm-hmm.
or maybe they're just not selling. Right.
Sure.
In a lot of cases, it does not make sense to sell right now.
Right.
And we're telling clients that, right? That's really how you build relationships, is by being the honest advisor.
Yes.
And in some cases, if they can wait, maybe they should wait.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say things are definitely going to get better, but I think it's very much a case-by-case basis and looking at where do you want to be in 5 years as a client, right? Do you have to sell now?
Yep.
If you do, how are we going to work through some of these challenges in the market?
Absolutely. And I think that's so crucial to all of our principal listeners to ensure that you have a broker on your side that is more of that advisor that understands, and then we'll give it to you straight, right? And just say, hey, maybe this isn't the right time, versus trying again to push on those transactions. So
correct.
Wonderfully said. Now coming back to the kind of branded net lease properties. So the Dollar Generals, the Starbucks, et cetera, who are so resilient in challenging economic times. What factors make them so resilient? And what are your thoughts on investments in these properties and rising inflation? So a little bit of a twofold question there.
Two different questions.
Yes.
The tenants are doing incredibly well.
Mm-hmm.
We have the lowest vacancy in retail that we've had since 2005, since CBRE began tracking vacancy, right? So retail's performing exceptionally
mm-hmm.
well. The tenants are strong. Their
yep.
sales have been growing. All that is really rock solid. So
mm-hmm.
clients like these deals because of the stability, because
yep.
they know they're going to be paying
mm-hmm.
they can pay their rent.
Right.
Choose not to, like Starbucks did during COVID, but that's a different story, right? We know that there's credit behind it, and these are long-term deals, right?
Sure.
The challenge is with inflation, if you have a flat lease as
mm-hmm.
an investor, your return is what it is. So if
mm-hmm.
you buy all cash and it's a 5% return with no rent bumps, you have to look at that almost like a bond investment and say,
right.
I know I'm going to be getting 5% for 20 years and I have to be comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get rent bumps within your base term, then obviously that helps outpace inflation somewhat.
Okay.
But I don't think that's the only piece of the puzzle. I
right.
think the key right now is to look for good real estate, because there's less development, construction costs are very high, we have a lot of tenant competition for spaces. So if you are focused on not just the tenant and the lease term, but the actual location of your real estate more than you were in the past,
mm-hmm.
I think over time, that's your security in the deal.
Okay.
Right? Get the
Makes
long-term
sense.
Lease, get the strong tenant, ideally get rent bumps if
yep.
you can, but focus more on that real estate because the demand is going to be there long-term.
Perfect. So taking a step back, maybe for some of our listeners who aren't sure exactly what assets can be classified as net lease, give us a little bit of an overview of that and what niches you're most excited about and potentially why.
That's one thing I love about this business, because it's constantly evolving.
Mm-hmm.
So net lease literally just refers to the lease structure.
Mm-hmm.
It is a net lease, taxes, maintenance, and insurance covered by the tenant in its
sure.
most simple form.
Mm-hmm.
Single tenant net lease takes that a bit further. It's the lease structure on its own freestanding parcel.
Yep.
Right? So that could be anything. Mm-hmm. Historically, when we think of net lease, usually we're thinking about retail.
Yep.
We're thinking about fast food and the dollar stores. Mm-hmm. It could be single tenant grocery. It
yep.
could be veterinary clinics.
Yep.
It could be industrial. Really anything that's subject to that lease structure.
Okay.
So we have all of our stable tenants, all the ones that we see when we drive down the street.
Yep.
But then we have MedTail, which I absolutely love. I think it's so interesting and something I'm definitely paying close attention to. We have the dialysis clinics. We have mm-hmm. hospitals and emergency rooms who are yep. becoming freestanding net mm-hmm. lease investments. If you think about any business that would benefit from being closer to the consumer and mm-hmm. having control of their site,
yep.
that's an ideal net lease property.
Perfect.
And we're going to see this continue to expand over time as landlords, if landlords continue to have more control. So they could come to the tenant and say, okay, I have 10 tenants who want my fantastic located site, right?
Yep.
I'm demanding mm-hmm. a true net lease structure.
Sure.
Whatever it is that is going to be built there.
Yep.
And I think that's going to lead to more expansion of the sectors as we know them now.
Absolutely. So you mentioned MedTail. So if some of our listeners don't know what that means, can you explain?
Sure. So it's the merging of medical and retail.
Mm-hmm.
So think of an urgent care clinic yep. that is in a shopping center,
yep.
right? That's MedTail, medical in retail.
Perfect.
But that has expanded so much mm-hmm. in the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
We have private equity coming into the space, which means yep. there'll be growth and mm-hmm. expansion, which we love. It's touching everything, like I mentioned, from urgent care centers to hospital systems
yep.
to veterinary clinics, anything that would benefit from, again, being closer to the consumer in a freestanding site.
Absolutely. And there's so many new companies that are coming out in that space, or subscription like medical services mm-hmm. and things like that. Out in LA, there's two of them in my local mall, you know, different brands and things like that. So definitely seeing that grow. Can you explain a little bit about the fundamentals of each of these new sectors and what makes them unique, what's potentially driving their success? So industrial, retail, MedTail, et cetera.
So I don't focus on industrial, so I'm going to leave that one. But okay. the one point I will say on industrial, I think, is proximity to the consumer will continue
Again.
To be
yep.
important,
right.
right? Online grocery delivery is still being done 85%
yep.
from a store.
Sure.
So, you know, everything is not these massive distribution centers
yep.
like we thought of. So I think we'll see smaller sites closer to the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
For the other categories, again, I think it's control. Tenants want control. And we saw that during the pandemic. If you're in a large shopping center, you can't decide where you're going to do order pickup, when your mm-hmm. deliveries are going to be. Everything is subject to co-tenancy rules and a
sure.
lot of regulations. So if you have a freestanding site, you have a lot more flexibility. Consumers also want efficiency. They want to mm-hmm. be able to come in, they want a consistent brand experience,
mm-hmm.
and they want to be able to get in and out very quickly and efficiently.
Yep.
So I think that's going to continue across all of these different business lines,
mm-hmm.
whether it is Aspen Dental, you know, the consistent dental experience
right.
in the consumer's neighborhood that's recognized
yep.
and easy and
mm-hmm.
efficient, clean, nice, pretty. Or whether that's maybe a big box, like a
mm-hmm.
Macy's doing a freestanding just to have the consumer mm-hmm. be able to come in, look through everything, and then leave. That's more of like the destination. They're coming because they like the brand.
Mm-hmm.
They can pop in. It's not going to mm-hmm. take all day. They don't have to dig through a whole mall, and they can leave. So I think if the tenant can afford to be on their own parcel, and that's a whole nother
sure.
discussion,
yep.
that we're going to see an increasing demand for freestanding.
Yeah.
Single tenant, at least.
What I'm hearing a lot is convenience,
right?
Right? Convenience from the consumer. So how close it is to them,
mm-hmm.
how easy it is to access. Also for the tenant as well, how convenient it is for them to do things that they need to run their business, but then also have that brand experience for the consumer and say, this is consistent across everywhere. So the convenience and ability to do that,
correct.
I think is huge. Are there any underrated or currently overlooked asset types that will be big winners down the line, in your opinion?
So we touched on a few already because
mm-hmm.
I'm so excited to share them. I think I still love the MedTail space.
Yep.
We've had a lot of discussion about car washes. That's been going on for
mm-hmm.
a few years.
Mm-hmm.
We have tremendous construction there. I think we're
yep.
kind of on the tail end of that boom
sure.
in growth.
Yep.
So I would just think of it, what would you like to see freestanding as a consumer? What in your life would you like to have a standardized experience or do you find frustrating to go to? Why couldn't it be dermatology clinics, ophthalmology, right? There's so many areas in the medical space that I think consumers would really welcome a more consistent experience. So that's something that we're certainly watching closely. And again, it's very hard to scale practices. So that's been the growing pain. But there are private equity companies coming in, buying up practices, standardizing them. So I think we will see more of that over time.
I absolutely agree. So what's your 30,000 foot overview of the CRE sector today? What shifts are worthy of our attention?
So one thing we're watching is the increase in costs. Insurance costs have basically doubled in the last year. Construction costs are very high. But on the actual property cost to operate, I think if that continues cannot possibly increase at the rate it has been, but if it does, we're going to see this fight over nets, the triple nets, taxes, maintenance, and insurance. Landlords are going to be pushing even harder for net leases across the board, and tenants are going to try to put caps on their expenses and leases. So I think we're going to see some push and pull on the actual expenses related to net lease over time. Because if you think about a net lease deal, when we're pricing it on the net operating income. If it's true triple net, we're not sometimes even privy to what the tenant is paying in insurance, maintenance, day to day, because they're paying those costs directly. So if those get out of hand, again, I think we'll see some fights back and forth about the lease structure. If you're an investor, you're going to absolutely welcome true triple net leases across the board. And if you're a tenant, might start pushing back a little bit on that. So that's one thing I think that we're watching is just costs overall. Of course, interest rates. I'm sure this will be aired in the future, but Powell is going to be speaking this Wednesday again on the next rate hike. We're all very much waiting for stabilization. We had the fastest increases in interest rates that we have had historically, certainly in my career, I think in the last 30 years. So that trajectory is very difficult to keep up with from a pricing stabilization standpoint. And our rates, I think today we're at about 7.1% roughly, seem absurdly high. Historically, they're not crazy, but it's that pace of increase that's been so difficult. So once things stabilize, we're going to see some pricing adjustments. It's unavoidable. But once that imbalance or that balance comes back, I think that's when the market really starts opening up again. It's not lack of demand. It's not lack of financial security with the tenants. It's not that the investments are not solid. It's that this change in the capital markets happens so fast. Nothing really makes sense at the moment.
So diving a little bit deeper into this, what's different currently versus typical of market cycle? So I think we touched on increasing rates and inflation, but what can current stakeholders learn potentially from the past?
I think one thing that's positive about where we are in the market is we don't have the same over-leveraged situation that we had in 2008, right? Most of our borrowers are very healthy. They have reasonable leverage amounts. Financially, they're in a good position. Unemployment's extremely low. The consumer's healthy. So economic factors are still very strong. This, to me, feels like a creation, economic, I guess, creation that is just causing pain without all of the challenges that we had in previous downturns. So I think it's more limited. Now, how long it goes on, how long the dislocation between interest rates and pricing goes on will determine, I guess, how bad things get. Is there a recession? What's it look like? Soft landing. We've all heard these terms now for 2 years, right? We're like, what's really happening? But it feels different in that we don't have a lot of defaults. Now, what we are seeing is when clients go to refi, if they have terms coming due, it's very difficult, again, to go from a 3.5-4% interest rate to 7 and have the cash flow to service the debt payment. So either you have to come up with more equity to buy down the loan a bit and make the numbers work, you sell. There's going to be some pivotal moments there as loans come due for refi.
Sure.
But we're not seeing the default that we've seen in previous cycles.
Okay, that's good. Now, when you are seeing, you know, clients with loans coming up on maturity date or the balloon payment is due or they have to do those types of things, what are they currently doing? Do you have experience with a lot of people saying, okay, I'm going to come up with the equity to pay this, or am I going to sell?
A lot more creative financing.
Okay.
So we're seeing more of the mezz piece coming in. So a second layer of debt to make up that equity. Mm-hmm. People are bringing in partners, limited partners, just really trying to pool funds and make the numbers work however they can. Mm-hmm. And this was not the last case for the case for the last mm-hmm. 10 years.
Sure.
You know, it used to be, okay, my loan's coming due. Let me get bids from traditional lenders. Which one's best? Okay, mm-hmm. we're done. Now mm-hmm. it's, number one, who's still lending?
Sure.
Who can I even go to? What is this going to look like? And how do I make up the difference?
Sure.
So if it doesn't make sense to sell, which in a lot of cases it doesn't, as we touched on before, how do you service the debt mm-hmm. effectively? And that's requiring a lot more creativity than it was in the past.
Yep. And one of the reasons I bring that up is to advise your clients on how to do that, but also a little bit of a Crexy pun right here is we do have maturity dates on loans in terms of ownership information and then interest rates as well. So, you know, in that exact example, you know, I've had brokers say that they started to use the platform because they saw a loan maturity date coming up pretty recently, had a 3.5% interest rate, and then now in the current market, that owner is not going to refinance or potentially not. So they are contacting them to see if there's anything that they can do and represent them on the selling side. So really
just
interesting
keep
stuff.
The platform. I love it. That's
we
great
do.
Information.
We do. Nice. We do. So it's an awesome tool for everyone, but thanks for clarifying on how, you know, people can get creative in those types of situations. Do you have any surprising or controversial thoughts about the current market or happenings that you'd like to share? I know no one has a crystal ball, but anything that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think I'm a little more realistic. Mm-hmm. Maybe some would see it as negative. I think the rates are going to stay higher longer, mm-hmm. unfortunately. And it's more just when do prices stabilize?
Sure.
Not, okay, when are rates going to be cut and how far down are they going to go?
Right.
I don't think we see the 2%, 2.5% again, maybe in our lifetime, a very long time.
Yeah.
And we hear over and over from, you know, a lot of our clients are extremely optimistic, mm-hmm. especially our developers, which I love, right? But I think that waiting, okay, I'm just going to wait 3-4 more months mm-hmm. or 2 more quarters because mm-hmm. then rates are going to come down. Or I'm going to wait until mid-2024 because
sure.
then I'm going to be back where I was in 2021. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that's the case. So I think there's a bit of understanding where the market is, and I do hope the rates come down a bit. But again, I don't think it's going to come down to the level that many people are hoping.
Sure. And the amount of times that I've heard that, you know, we even touched on it today, even though the rates are higher than a couple of years ago, they're still relatively low compared
right.
to historically how they have been. So,
right.
you know, some people do want to be a little optimistic on that and want to wait. But, you know, I think time is now. You know, a lot of people are saying, you know, still get in, it might increase or might not go back to where it was.
Right.
So headed into 2024 and looking into the next few years, will we see more or less demand for single tenant net lease and multi-tenant net leases? More supply or development? And then what are the likely ramifications of these shifts?
I definitely think we're going to see more supply and more demand, just mm-hmm. more activity overall.
Yep.
So on the multi-tenant side, this is where investors are finding yield. This
yep.
is where they're finding upside.
Yep.
The number of clients who have shifted from, I just want to set it and forget it, passive deal to, well, maybe I'll take on some local tenants or maybe I'll take on a multi-tenant center and I can work that and have it for a longer period of time. It's amazing how that mindset has shifted. So I think multi-tenant is really going to have its heyday in the next few years, and I'm excited about that. Single tenant development has to open back up as construction costs start to come down. Mm-hmm. As we get, obviously, approvals are a little bit easier to get now than they were during the pandemic. As deals start to be repriced from the development perspective to where it makes sense to move forward and you have the eye on higher exit cap rates, if you can still make it work, mm-hmm. those deals are going to start to get done again. So I think we're going to see more supply, a little more development as the market stabilizes, and then demand shifting, I would say, more attention to multi-tenant and value-add properties than we've seen in the past. But overall, I think 24 will be much better than 23. It just depends on how you define better mm-hmm. and exactly what specific asset type you're looking at.
Yeah. We'd love to hear that. Better is better.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be great. What advice would you give to young CRE professionals as they navigate a shifting market landscape?
This is both one of the most challenging times to enter the business and also one of the absolute best. We just hired some new people for our team because I think it's the ideal time to build relationships right yep. now. Clients, number one, have more time because yep. the market's just slower. But two, they want to build connections. They need information. They need advice. People are really trying to figure out strategies, and it's mm-hmm. not as straightforward as it used to be.
Yep.
So true value add brokers, people who are advising and not just transacting, are incredibly important in this market.
Yep.
So if you're just coming into the business, I think this is the ideal time to build your knowledge base and true relationships. Maybe you do less deals the first few years. Not maybe, probably, definitely yeah. you'll do less deals. But that's okay because right. you're going to do enough to get through, and then you're going to be in a much better position when the market turns.
Yep.
So play the long game.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I've heard that multiple times. So if you all at home are sitting there thinking, should I get into brokerage now? The answer is yes. Should I continue to do this? Right? The answer is yes. During that downtime, it is where you want to continue to build those relationships. Like you said, Carly, be that advisor, go out, make the extra effort, meet with these people, because then again, you're going to be top of mind when they do, you know, want to transact, right? So put that people first aspect in and then just keep staying with it. You guys will succeed. Thank you.
So true.
Tapping into our third topic. So given your technical background and expertise, I'm sure our listeners are curious about your answers to a couple of few rapid fire questions and words of advice. So first and foremost, if you were given $50 million today and had to invest it immediately, what would be your go-to asset type and location and why?
I'm ready to receive that call. So if anyone listening would like to give me the $50 million, I'm ready. I happen to love single tenant grocery. Okay. I think that is a format that is going to continue to be more and more in demand. Mm-hmm. So would love to be part of the Aldi expansion. I think that's really interesting. Trader Joe's, any of those medium to smaller format freestanding yep. grocery stores, happen to love that deal structure. I think anything that is a tenant that has room to grow, that has not reached market saturation, who is doing a true net lease structure, because mm-hmm. that's still going to be the most in demand in the market,
sure,
and is able to handle the construction costs so that their rents are at market. So what I mean by that, often we see very inflated rents on build-to-suit projects mm-hmm. because that's the only way the developer can then recap the cost to build an expensive building.
Sure.
One thing with Aldi is their rents are in line with market. They're lower, right? Which is great from an investor standpoint because then you're not having issues when you go to sell, or if they ever choose to relocate, you can re-tenant the space, which
right.
creates a very stable long-term investment vehicle when you can actually build and still have rents that are in line with market. So there are many examples of that, but I think that's one space that I would certainly put attention on.
Perfect. I like that. And then any type of location, any area in the U.S. that you would lean to one place over another?
I'm really liking secondary markets. I think there are pockets of opportunity mm-hmm. in every state. I don't believe all the growth is always going to be in Nashville and Austin and Florida. I mean, lovely places. Yes, they're great. But there is opportunity everywhere in mm-hmm. our country.
Yep.
You want to have the best position in your specific market, whether that's a market of 10,000 people or 200,000 people.
Right.
I think that's more important than am I in the hottest city? Mm-hmm. Because again, this is a long-term game.
Yep.
And you don't want to be the type of investor or broker who's just following today's trends.
Yep.
I think that is where a lot of people get into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would look for great markets or great positioning within a variety of markets.
Absolutely. It's a long-term game for sure. It's a cyclical market. Stay in it and then look for that long-term growth. I love it. Second question, what are your most recommended podcasts or books? And this does not have to be commercial real estate related.
There's a lot. CBRE does a great podcast, The Weekly Take with Spencer Levy, which I like. I run my own podcast, CRE Fast Five, which is interviews and investor education. So obviously I'm pretty biased to that one since it's my podcast.
Everyone go listen.
CRE Fast Five. And then in the non-commercial real estate space, I think it's important to keep learning about topics outside of your day-to-day life because that helps you grow as a person and it helps you look at problems differently. So I happen to love Huberman Labs, neuroscientist. For anyone listening who hasn't followed him, absolutely brilliant. Deep dives on things that I knew very little about, right? So Huberman Labs, I think, is my other go-to.
I love that. Yes, you can learn so many different things and it just impacts your daily life, right? Mm-hmm. So how can you show up better and continue to grow, plus also know about your industry? So thank you for those recommendations. Mm-hmm. What favorite tool or software do you use on the job? And I promise this is not a trick question.
Can't even say that with a straight face. She's already going, you don't have to say
the eject button is there.
Crexie's great. We'll just say that one more time. No, it really is a very, very good platform. I think the CRM is so important, whatever you choose to use, right? Keeping organized goes back to that, like having a system for everything that you do. I like Canva for marketing. It's just easy to put different graphics together for social, much easier than Adobe. So I think it's not about what specifically you use. It's about continuing to add new tools to your business. And there are thousands of them.
Sure.
But looking at each part of your business process and saying, how can I make this a little bit better or easier? And revisiting all the tools that you use on a regular basis.
Right. Absolutely. I can't touch on revisiting the tools. And then also time is money, right? So what is going to make me a little bit more effective or efficient? Or how can I cut out time? Or how can I be a little bit better? So the CRM, taking notes, making sure that you're using it. And whatever tool it is just the utilization. Right? Just making sure that you use what you have.
Not just downloading it to your phone and then going, oh,
I forgot about
500
it.
500 apps on my phone and I use none of them. Right. Actually implementing them. I think
exactly.
Is key.
Exactly. And then last but not least, what mantra or quote most resonates with you and why?
You're going to laugh when I say this one, but bring your own sunshine is something I've said since I was little.
And I love that.
It's how I approach every day. So our business is incredibly volatile. We deal with a lot of very big personalities, a lot of drama, a lot of crisis. But if you can enter each day and say, I'm going to choose to live this day the way that I want to be proud of at the end of the day, looking back, then I think you've won. And if you can, especially as a broker, keep consistent, be professional, try to be unbothered by the things that are just personality driven or outside your control, and show up every day the very best you can be with your own sunshine, with your own attitude that I'm going to live today the way I want, regardless of all of these external factors.
I love that because sometimes we just let that negativity in and, you know, the only two things we can really control in life is our attitude and our effort. So the way that you show up and then what work that you do every day. So thank you so much for sharing that with our listeners. I think everything that you've said today has been so influential. I've taken a lot from this and I know that you guys have too. Before we leave and we let you go, any final words, any pieces of wisdom, anything that you want to share with our listeners?
I would go back to the saying that I mentioned earlier, that this is the long game. And all of this instability that we're facing right now will pass. And to not forget the opportunity we all have to be in this industry, no matter what part of the business you're in, it's an amazing, amazing industry. I can think of no other place, no other career path, no other place in the world we could live, nothing else we could be doing that would afford more potential and opportunity. So I think it's very easy to take for granted the opportunity that we truly all have to even be connected and listening to this podcast, right? That means that you're in this sphere already, and where you're going to go with that is limitless.
I love that. It is a great opportunity. It's a great industry. We love having you on the podcast. Thank you so much. If our viewers and our listeners want to get in touch, how do they do so? Social media, email, give us all the details.
Absolutely. I hope I am extremely easy to find. You can just Google my name and more videos and articles will come up than anyone ever has time to read, but feel free to email me, carly.iacono@cbre.com, Google the podcast, CRE Fast Five, or at Carly Iacono on Instagram is great as well, or LinkedIn.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much. We know that you're so busy, so we really appreciate you sitting down with us and sharing your insights.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure not to miss the next one. Visit go.crexy.com/podcast and sign up to get the very next episode delivered straight to your inbox. You can also subscribe to the Crexy Podcast on your favorite podcast app or check out our YouTube channel for any video recordings of each episode. Goodbye, stay well, and we'll see you next time.